Welcome to Extreme Genes, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And welcome to another spine-tingling edition of Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. I am Fisher, your radio root sleuth, on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. Our guest today, we're going to talk to a guy named Zachariah Fike. He has put together an organization called Purple Hearts Reunited. And this guy has become so passionate about discovering displaced Purple Hearts and reuniting them either with the veterans themselves, if they're still living, or descendants. And he's got stories to tell that'll just touch your heart, and you're going to love hearing that coming up in about 8 minutes or so. Later in the show, we're going to talk to Oscar Hammerstein III. He goes by Andy. He's going to be doing a special presentation at RootsTech, the world's largest family history conference in Salt Lake City, Utah, coming up in just a couple of weeks. He's going to be doing this with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, performing Rodgers and Hammerstein music, and you're going to hear all about his family history. Amazing stuff coming up. Hey, just a reminder, by the way, if you have not yet signed up for our free weekly Genie newsletter, you can do so at extremegenes.com. And when you do, you'll get the top 10 tips for beginning genealogists from David Allen Lambert, the chief genealogist of the New England Historic Genealogical Society and AmericanAncestors.org. That's a lot to fit on a business card, David. How are things in Boston?
Things in Beantown are doing great, Fish. Are you looking forward to RootsTech?
Oh, absolutely. We're just a couple of weeks away now, February 8th through 11th in Salt Lake City, Utah. And of course, we want to invite all the genies to come by the Extreme Genes booth. We're going to do a meet and greet with you, David, and of course, myself and Tom Perry, our preservation authority. We're going to do 2 one-hour meet and greets, one on Thursday from 2:30 to 3:30, and one on Saturday from 10:15 to 11:15. And that'll be at the Extreme Genes booth, 1325 at the Salt Palace Convention Center in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, you know, I think that we need to toss out a contest. For me to our listeners, come by the booth one of those 2 days, and if you're the 176th visitor to do a selfie with the three of us at the booth, I'll give you a free one-hour consultation with me on genealogy on phone, or perhaps if you're near Boston, come on in and I can work with you there.
Wow, that is quite an offer. Of course, 176, because today's show is our 176th.
I thought it was a fitting way to do it. Well, let's start off the family histoire news with some really touching news from Pearl Harbor. Of course, last month we celebrated the 75th anniversary of the attack. The USS Oklahoma was one of the vessels that sank in Pearl Harbor, and of the 429 killed, only 35 were ever identified and brought home. So a sailor from the USS Oklahoma from the state of Alabama named Henry Soley was one of those that was never identified. But now, with technology, they've been able to identify him, and he's now brought home, and he's buried. Family members that never even knew him went to his funeral, and they said it was a celebration of his life to welcome him home after all those years.
Wow, DNA comes through again.
It really does. And on a happy note, 125th birthday, month of January, for Ellis Island.
Yes. Now, did you have ancestors come through there?
I didn't, but my wife's great-grandfather came through there from Scotland. Most of mine came either through Canada or in New England earlier than that.
Now, I had a grandmother come through there, and I think I've read a stat where something like half of all Americans have somebody who came through Ellis Island.
It's an amazing place, and the nice thing about it is that you can experience the whole passenger arrival process right there at the museum, and you can see the Statue of Liberty.
And by the way, at extremegenes.com, we've posted a great YouTube video somebody put together of a little history of Ellis Island. And even if you have an attention span somewhat less than a goldfish, you can enjoy this thing and get your kids to enjoy it, too, and appreciate this important place in American history.
Well, you know, it's funny. My grandmother always told me if she got up in the morning and didn't read her name in the obituary column, she could get up and go and do her daily chores. So I want to say that I called you early in the week about that obituary. I think we need to share this one with the listeners.
Oh, yeah, this is great. And somebody wrote their own obituary, which you got to recommend, right? It was written by a woman in Madison, Wisconsin named Kay Ann Hegestad. And this is what she wrote. Kay Ann Hegestad, age 72, bought the farm, is no more.
has ceased to be, left this world, is bereft of life, gave up the ghost, kicked the bucket, Murio Seyfini. She died on Friday, January 13th, 2017, after a wimpy non-battle with multiple myeloma after almost 2 years to the date of diagnosis. No one should say she fought a courageous battle, because she did not. What a whiner. She was ready to quit treatment many times, but her family pushed her to continue, which was good since she then had time to have parties and say goodbye to friends and relatives. She wrote this all herself, and it just goes on and on, but what a treat, and we've shared it. It's on extremegenes.com.
Last week, we talked about Family Tree Now and
yes.
You opt out. Well, hats off to Patrick Allen, who has written an article, and it's linked right on our Extreme Genes website, on how to opt out on a lot of popular people search sites. That includes Spokio, PQ, Instant Checkmate, and one that you probably have heard of, White Pages.
Wow. That's great. Step by step, too. And so that's going to be really important. What I like about these sites, they're great for us to research through. But what I don't like about them is if we don't want to be found, you know, maybe you got a crazy ex-boyfriend or girlfriend, that would be the place to opt out from.
That's probably a good idea. I think I'm going to do that after we finish the show today. Well, every week I normally mention a free database, but I got something better for our listeners. In honor of our 176th episode, NEHS has a deal. If you are not a member of NEHS, you've been able to try as a guest member for a while now. For $20 off our regular $89.95 membership, you can now join, if you're a new member, by using the checkout code EXTREME.
Oh, very
nice. And this is a great way to experience all of AmericanAncestors.org if you've been a guest member for a while now. And I'll send it so we have it for the website and for Twitter as well. Look forward to seeing some of you at Roots Tech, and I'll talk to you next week, Fish.
Thanks so much, David, and we'll see you soon.
You know, one of my favorite family heirlooms that I very much treasure is a purple heart that came down into my family that belonged to my mother's cousin. And very unfortunately, he was killed in Europe May 1st of 1945, just a couple of weeks before VE Day. And it very much affected his mother, who lived with that for the rest of her days. But it's something I treasure. And it's always a shock to me to hear that people have let these get out of their families and people are finding them or they're auctioning them off on eBay. And that's why this guy seems very important to me. Zachariah Fike. Hi, Zach. How are you?
Good, sir. Thanks for having me on the show.
Zach is the founder of an organization called PurpleHeartsReunited.org. And you guys are out actually finding families to go with these missing badges of people who have really paid quite the, in some cases, the ultimate sacrifice.
Absolutely. We're a nonprofit that exists to find lost or stolen military medals of valor and return them either to the veteran who earned them or their families.
So how long have you been doing this, Zach?
First started in 2009 when my mom bought me a Purple Heart for Christmas. The organization itself didn't start until 2012. So we've been going strong for 4 years now, and to date we've returned roughly 300 of these medals to families across the country.
Wow, that is so cool. Now, you say she bought you a Purple Heart. Where did she get it?
She found it in an antique shop. Believe it or not, these medals are turning up all over the country. They're being found in old abandoned homes, vehicles, furniture. Metal detector enthusiasts are finding them buried in the ground. My favorite story last year, a dog was digging in the backyard and found a Purple Heart. That dog became the first dog in our history that I know of that found a medal and returned it to a family member.
Yeah.
Smuckers the dog. Beautiful. Wore the medal around its collar and walked right up to the daughter and took it off the collar. It was amazing.
Wow. What? That's an incredible story. Where was that?
Yeah. It was in Denver, Colorado, and overnight that dog became internet famous, and people sent care packages, dog food, bones, everything. She lived really well into the last moments of her life there.
Wow, that's an incredible story. Well, yeah, these things do come up all over the place, and it always seems like such a shame to me that they've gotten out of the family, and I would assume that sometimes it's through death, through divorce.
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. 50% medals have just been found or located in some of the ways we've discussed. If you can envision, a medal has been found that way. You know, airline tarmac, baggage claim, taxi cab, Broadway show. just amazing. Now, the other 50%, we have to essentially try to locate and rescue. Huh. Some of these metals have made it to, like you said, eBay, pawn shops. There are many, many metal enthusiasts or collectors. Some are really good. Some are doing the right thing and attempting to rescue these metals so that these men can be honored. Some, however, see it a different light and are basically selling these medals for profit.
Wow.
The average posthumous medal goes for roughly, these days, almost $400 or $500 on average. If you can tie historical significance, these medals can go for thousands of dollars, which we find very unfortunate. And we do our best to buy those medals back and get them back to the families.
Well, now, how old is the oldest Purple Heart that you've come across and have been able to reunite with descendants?
So the medal was first introduced as the medal we know on February 22nd of 1932. That's when Congress, led by General MacArthur, he pushed Congress to develop a medal that would essentially signify the soldiers from World War I that shed their blood or their lives. They had their first ceremony on August of 32 at what they call the Purple Heart Hall of Honor, which mm-hmm. is in Newburgh, New York. And they first issued roughly 127 medals out to those soldiers. And we actually found one of those original 100 medals, and we were able to return it to a grandson. So we could say that we've returned one of the original Purple Heart medals to
a grandson. Wow. There were predecessors, though, to this, right, that go back to, like, Washington.
Correct. Known as the Badge of Military Merit. It was a cloth patch, purple in color, in the shape of a heart, and hand-stitched across the front was the word merit. That was first awarded August 7th of 1782. August 7th, if you didn't know, every year is National Purple Heart Day in our country. So if you know a veteran who served, please reach out to them and thank them for their service. It was awarded not for wounds that we know today. It was actually for fidelity and service, much like the Medal of Honor. Huh. And that's essentially what it was initially. It's our nation's oldest medal, and gave soldiers the right to come and go from the camp whenever they wanted, and officers like myself would have to salute them as they walked by.
Isn't that interesting? Have you ever found any of those going back that far?
No, those are super rare. You know, anything can happen. There's a few that are in museums. They believe a lot of them were just destroyed over time. They're not sure how many were issued. They know for a fact it was awarded to the first three, and they believe maybe a dozen more, but they're really not sure.
That's incredible. Well, talk about some of the families you've reached out to. I mean, they must have been absolutely astonished to get a phone call or a text or an email from you guys about their ancestor's service or their relative who might even still be living, right?
We just had a beautiful ceremony on Saturday in Fremont, Ohio. I have what we call a Valor Rescue Team. I have volunteers that help me locate these medals across the country, and we purchased them. This medal set was a very large set. It was from World War I. This thing was the most complete set I've ever seen. It had his medals. It had his dog tags. It had his wallet with money from France.
Wow.
It had his pocket knife. It actually had the shrapnel that he pulled from his body in this box, which is amazing. And it was with a collector. This collector had been collecting for many years. He had a large storage unit, so this stuff was kind of just piled up in the storage unit. We're able to locate it, pay for it. We believe that the family had someone connected to Florida. That's how the medals kind of ended up there. Could have been, like you said, an estate sale or something to that nature. But regardless, we did the historical research and we found the family and presented those items back to his four grandchildren. Not only was his four grandchildren there, but he had four great-grandchildren and two great-great-grandchildren
wow.
in attendance. And it was just amazing to see that history coming back to that family, and they were just blown away by it.
I can only imagine. Have you run into some cases of stolen valor before, Zach?
We typically don't deal with that. We do have friends in the community that, you know, concentrate on people wearing valor that they're not supposed to wear, but that's really not in our wheelhouse. Typically, the medals that we rescue were within a metal enthusiast's hands, either for preservation purposes or in the purpose of selling them to make a profit.
Okay, right. And that would be most of them, I would imagine. That's the easiest. That's the low-hanging fruit, right?
We spent $50,000 last year to rescue roughly 125 medals, and that was from eBay, Craigslist and military collectors wow. across the country.
And where's the money come from?
We're a nonprofit. Honestly, I didn't think that this thing would grow as large as it's grown. People started asking me, how do we donate? How do we help? And so we established a nonprofit to receive donations. 100% of the donations we receive from the general public go back into returning these medals. You know, that's rescuing the medal from sure. perhaps, eBay. We get them professionally framed free of charge. If you've seen any photos of our frames, they're absolutely beautiful. That preserves the medal, the integrity of it. And then we travel to these hometowns and do these reuniting ceremonies for each family. So we'll travel to your hometown and try to give you an amazing ceremony where we subject you to that history that you never knew about and teach people about the history of the medal, what sacrifice means, and what a hero their loved one was. And for a lot of the families, it goes beyond just the medal. That ceremony means a lot to them. It's reuniting families, it's connecting families, and for some families, it's bringing them closure.
Well, and when you think about that, I mean, Purple Hearts, since you mentioned, go back to only about 1932, we're really talking about the earliest recipients were World War One. I don't assume they hit the Spanish-American War, or did they?
There were some veterans that were issued Purple Hearts for the Civil War.
Really?
Things have changed. Requirements have changed since then. But there were some families that followed through and processed a Purple Heart for their Civil War veterans.
Wow.
But yes, you're correct. Primarily, it's World War One and up to date. We literally, just before you called me, I reunited our first Desert Storm medal. There wasn't very many casualties. I think it was 148 in Desert Storm. We got a phone call from a man who found a complete medal set down in Georgia. And it belonged to a young Marine who died in 91 during Desert Storm. He was actually one of four of the first casualties. Literally, I mean, four names came across the wire. The Pentagon was trying to sort out who it was, but he was one of the very first deaths of Desert Storm.
Unbelievable. I was thinking with these ceremonies, many of these people must have known the individual in most cases because they're so recent, yes?
Yeah, I mean, they're connected by blood. You know, we try to find the closest relative available. But in some cases, you're dealing with maybe an only son. So maybe his family didn't exist. And in those cases, we find what we call homes of honor. Let's say you were from Fremont, Ohio. I would reach out to their historical society or maybe town hall and get them to, you know, receive the medal and put it on display. That way, you know, that hometown can recognize one of their own heroes and people will come through that museum for many years to come and appreciate that service.
The service is purpleheartsreunited.org. If you have a Purple Heart, that's the way to reach out to Zachariah Fike. He is the founder. Thanks so much, Zach, for your time, and thanks for your service. I think you're doing a great thing.
Hey, thank you for having us on. It's our pleasure.
And coming up, we'll talk to Oscar Hammerstein III, better known as Andy. He's going to be one of our speakers, one of our featured people at Roots Tech in Salt Lake City, Utah, coming up in just a couple of weeks. Andy, welcome to Extreme Genes. It's an honor and pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure, too.
Boy, what a background you've got, obviously. Basically, your grandfather was the guy who made Broadway what it is today.
Pretty much. And then his father made Broadway, period. So between the two of them, they really stayed pretty busy in the theater.
Now, what about yourself? Are you in the theater world?
Now, I'd be the first to say no, but then I find myself on stages in front of crowds of thousands, and I wonder, maybe I'm not giving myself enough credit. Maybe I am in show business after all. I do a lot of talking about my family, and it is some form of entertainment. So I think I am in show business now.
It's worked out that way, hasn't it? Now, you're the family historian at this point, and I know there must be dozens and dozens of cousins out there because, as you've mentioned to me off the air, you had obviously lots of siblings. Your dad had lots of siblings. Yep. His dad had lots of siblings. But you seem to be the one who has taken the lead on doing the family history and written a book about it. Tell us a little about the family background and some stories you learned about Rodgers and Hammerstein and how that all became such a big thing.
When I think about the process of having collected materials for the book that I wrote and learning something that I didn't know before I started, there's a lot of that. When you go back in time and try to research your family, you find out that your brother's really your cousin and that you realize that families are as messy back then as they are today. And I have found it it explains a lot when you get right down to it. When you get granular and you find out how things happened, it starts to make a lot more sense. It becomes part of a more clear narrative. And that's always enjoyable. I really enjoy the process of discovery.
Yes.
Where something I didn't know was going to be there is going to be there.
I think in the process of discovery, we often find that knowing something isn't nearly as fun as finding it out, you know?
That is absolutely true. That is absolutely true. And sometimes answers will show up long after you stop looking, like, oh, I will never know the answer to that. And then all of a sudden, some military record or some birth certificate will reveal a piece of information that you just go, oh, that now that makes sense. He couldn't have been that old. That couldn't have been his
right,
kid,
right.
That kind of thing. And I do that was very enjoyable. I mean, I'll give away one of my great stories. One of my great stories is when I was just starting out and I was taking my little tape recorder back then. Yeah, tape recorders, they were separate from your phone. And you take them around to the oldest members of your family.
Yes.
And I would go really far afield, second cousins, wives, just whoever was still alive. I would get them down on tape and I'd start talking to them. And I would talk to one of these widows of one of the older Hammersteins. And she turns to me and she goes, oh, wait a minute. And she goes, I think there's a box in the attic.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah. And all of a sudden, your hands go like sweaty and hot. And you go, really? Let me help you get them down.
Right.
And she says, yeah, go ahead. And I open up the box and there's like bound editions of program guides from 1894, scrapbooks from 1890, photographs no one has ever seen before. When you opened that box, you didn't realize that it was going to change your life.
Right.
You just thought it was a box.
Yeah. It's a time machine.
It's a time machine, but it's also like an enormous responsibility because it only regains meaning by how much effort you put into that box. It's changed my whole, changed the course of my life, actually.
Oh, I can imagine. And of course, you've got to share it with people. Otherwise, its value is minimized.
Precisely. You have to understand where it fits in the larger narrative so that you can provide not just data, but information and even meaning to what it is you're trying to share. So,
is there a Hammerstein Museum out there?
There isn't a Hammerstein Museum, but there's probably going to become one very soon. My brother Willie is working hard to turn the old farmhouse in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, into a museum for Hammerstein stuff. So with any luck, I'll have the opportunity to give all the paraphernalia, as it were, to him to display.
Boy, that's really important to have a plan and where this stuff is going to go. And I think we all
True.
Have that problem in any family. You want to
True.
Make sure that these things survive in one form or another. You've digitized them all, I assume, by
of
now?
Of course.
Yeah?
I have digitized almost everything by now. That's something of a relief because for me, it's not really the ephemera itself. It's the information contained in it.
Right.
It's not the object. It's the story of the object.
Right.
So being able to digitize it allows you to not feel so proprietary over the actual object. You got what you needed from it. Now you can just give it away and share it with other people.
Yep.
It's not the important thing.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Even an old family Bible record, it's great to own the original pages. But more
yes.
important than that is to have it out there for others who may have interest in the future to be able to
Precisely.
Access it. Are you musical?
I've been trying to be. Like in this enormous transition from being a painter to being a writer. First, I was writing, of course, nonfiction. And nonfiction, nonfiction tells you where it's going to take you. You know, like, this is what happened. You're either going to follow this story or you're going to make something up. So follow this story. That's
sure.
nonfiction. But fiction is like, hey, you can make stuff up. And that's what I've been working on now, but trying to incorporate semi-fiction into screenplays about my great-great-grandfather's vaudeville house at the turn of the century. So that's been a great challenge for me, and I've been really enjoying it, and I hope something will come of it. So that is, I do write, and I do write about the family history, but now I'm taking more liberties, which is very enjoyable.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with an historical novel, because I think to a
no.
great extent that makes this material much more accessible to people who don't want
no.
just the facts.
I think maybe you would appreciate it. Right now I'm building up a story where Jack Johnson, the black prize fighter, meets
yep.
Will Rogers, the essayist, in a barn on the roof of a vaudeville house. And they have a long conversation. And for me, to be able to take two people like that and make them have a conversation even a fictitious one, is just so satisfying.
Yes.
So I can say that this has taken over my life in a lot of great ways.
Wow. How's your family take to this? Obviously, it's a whole different world for you.
Yes. Well, I'm sure my wife thinks I live in a world of my own, and that's no question true. And my children are patient and loving, so they put up with whatever I do. I can't but say I think it's smooth sailing for my family.
That's incredible. Well, let's talk about what's coming up at Roots Tech Thursday
sure.
night, which would be February 9th in Salt Lake City, Utah. You're going to be doing a presentation about your ancestors and Rodgers and Hammerstein at the Salt Lake City Conference Center with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Wow.
Yeah, I wish they would give me more time to speak, but the amount of time that I do have, my job basically is to provide something of a historical context to what it is you're hearing, so you can bring a little more meaning into your listening to Rodgers and Hammerstein music. You'll go, oh, yes, of course, that was during World War II, or yes, of course, that was because of this or because of that. So I hope I can give meaning or a little tiny added richness to the music, though in truth, I'm sure it doesn't really need me, but there I
well,
am.
Well, I think it's going to help out just a whole lot. And tickets are free. This is the thing. It's so amazing. So you go to rootstech.org and you can get your tickets as they're still available. Andy, it has been a delight
yes,
to
sir.
Visit with you, and we so look forward to seeing you in Salt Lake City, Utah, coming up in February.
The privilege is all mine. I can't wait.
And coming up for you, Tom Perry is going to be here, our preservation authority from TMCPlace.com. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hello.
Closing in on Roots Tech and looking forward to our meet and greets. We've got one on Thursday, one on Saturday at our booth, which is the Extreme Jeans booth, 1325 in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I have to bring this up before we get started talking about that, Tom. The list is out from Keeper. It's the most used passwords of 2016. And listen to some of these. Okay, the number one most used password, 123456. That's a tough one. And
so
then
you're not just counting down. Somebody actually uses that as their password.
Yeah, that's their password. And the number seven password is 123456789. The number four password is 123456789. Yeah, then you go to 9, that's the number 2 password.
Oh, wow.
Then you go all the way and add a 0 at the end, that's the number 6 password, 123456789 0.
Do these people work for the DNC?
Well, that word was password, right?
Oh, you're kidding.
Remember John Podesta?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and the password was password. That is the number 8 most common password out there. QWERTY is another one. QWERTY, you know, the top of the keyboard, the top line there on the left. That's the number 3 most common password. The number 5 most common password, 111111. Yeah. Number 9 is 123123. And number 10 is 9 through 1 backwards. So,
wow.
So, you know, this is what we've talked about before. Don't be ridiculous, people. You got to make them longer. You got to mix in capitals. You got to have letters and numbers. And even better than that is something like an asterisk or an exclamation point mixed in there somewhere as well.
You
to
know,
make
it's crazy
it really tough.
That a lot of these different sites now are forcing us to be smart and not be stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, that just blows my mind that somebody would have a password with those numbers that they would have their, you know, private things or family history, different things like that that people would have access to.
Oh, money.
Oh.
Retirement.
If you're thinking, oh, I need to use the top row of my keyboard so I don't forget what my password is, say you can do something like, say you don't even have a cat, but you have dogs, and your favorite dog is Jeremy. So on a piece of paper, put my password for site XYZ is cat. So anybody's going to see cat, they're not going to know what that means. But you know that's really my dog's name, Jeremy.
Right. And spell it backwards if you want.
Exactly.
You know, something like that.
And make maybe the middle letter in a capital. So like when you write the word cat as your reminder what it is, put it lowercase c, capital A, and then a lower T, and then maybe an 8 after it, or 14, or whatever year the...
Well, I got to make it longer than that.
Right.
But yes, put the name in or something like
right,
that.
Right, but that's just to remind you, so you have that clue when you see little C, big A, little T, and 18 after it, you know, oh, that's really my dog's name, and the third letter is capitalized, and then I have the year he was born. And as we're talking about things that are safe with Roots Tech coming up, for all you listeners that are going to be coming to Roots Tech, make sure you get all your stuff organized and come to Roots Tech with your questions, because there's going to be amazing people there that are going to be able to help you.
Absolutely. One other thought, by the way, on these passwords. How about the name of an ancestor and split up their birth year so it'd be 18 Elizabeth 74.
Exactly.
Or something like that. With an exclamation point. So it's longer, and you mix in the capitals and the smalls like we talk about and make it really tough.
Oh, yeah. And you write down a code word that you'll know exactly what that means, who Elizabeth is and how the years are. But you're going to do something different, like write down 00, maybe her husband's name. So you've written down his name, but you really know it's his wife's name. So if you forget it, you can look it up and you know what it is. But somebody finds your cheat note is going to have no idea what it means.
All right, Tom. Roots Tech coming up in Salt Lake City, Utah at the Salt Palace. A lot of genies are going to be there. What can they expect to see?
There's going to be all kinds of cool things. In fact, somebody that's listened to our show has heard of Ron Fox.
Yes.
He's actually going to be there. He's going to have his own little booth where you can bring him old photos, and he can help you date them, tell you even if they're worth things. It's almost like the antique roadshow. And you don't actually have to bring your photo if you're really scared about that. Just make sure you take a good color copy of it, of both sides, so he can actually look at it.
Well, I've known Ron for over 20-some-odd years, and this guy is absolutely killer when it comes to photographs.
He has, like you say, just this incredible mind. If you have a lot of photos you want to get scanned, we're going to be having scanning parties there. We're going to be working with Easy Photo Scan, where you can scan stuff for free. We're going to have a new release. We've told people about if you want to rent a scanner, you can rent a scanner. We're going to start renting slide scanners now.
Oh, hello.
Oh, yeah. This is so cool because most people don't need a scanner forever, and nobody needs a slide scanner forever. You only have so many slides.
Right.
So your family reunion or a get-together, you can go in and rent this for a week and have everybody bring their slides. Everybody chips in, knocks out their slides. Instead of buying a cheap old $200-$300 slide scanner, you're going to get a $5,000 slide scanner for a week that's going to give you incredible pictures.
Isn't that a great idea? And they're going to be displaying these at the Easy Photo Scan booth at Roots Tech?
Yeah, we'll have them in Easy Photo Scan. We'll also have them in our TMC Place booth, as well as a lot of other things, a shot box. We're trying to make this so people can get the best and latest technology without having to invest a lot of money or settle in for second class.
Right.
This way you can render for a week, whether it's the Easy Photo Scan type things, which are the slide scanners, the photo scanners. It just makes it so easy to do everything. Just need to get organized. So if you have a lot of pictures, bring them with you, and we'll be doing free scanning at our booth and at Easy Photo Scan.
And, of course, if you have questions about this, as you prepare to come to Roots Tech, if you're going to make it out there, you can always send an email to asktom@tmcplace.com, and he can give you more details.
This is going to be one of the best Roots Techs ever. The incredible things are going to be there. A lot of associates we're going to be working with. We've got new software we're going to be displaying. It's just absolutely incredible for you to be there.
And, of course, remember, LeVar Burton is a keynote speaker, which
Woo,
is going to
Star
be very
Trek.
Exciting. Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Star Trek. Yes, I suppose. Do you think we're going to see a lot of genies out there dressed in Star Trek attire?
I sure hope so.
Well, but he was the guy. He was Kunta Kinte, though, in Roots. That's what I think most folks are going to think of
right,
him for
right.
from this.
You're right. You're totally right. It's just my son saw it, and he just lit up because he's totally a Star Trek nerd. He just loves it.
Yeah, there's so many friends are going, can you get me a signed picture of him? Can you get me this? You know, we'll
right.
see how it goes.
Right. In fact, The Property Brothers, one of the number one shows on HGTV, they're going to be at Roots Tech, and that's going to be a lot of fun, too, doing their history, finding out about them growing up.
And Andy Hammerstein, he is Oscar Hammerstein III, talking about his ancestor from Rodgers and Hammerstein and how they created what Broadway is today, essentially. That's going to be tremendous.
Oh, this is going to be so much fun. If you have any chance of coming, you've got to come to this one. This is a must-do.
And you can go online to rootstech.org to get your tickets and find out everything else you want to do, including sign up for various classes. You're going to be teaching one, yes?
Oh, yeah. I'll be there doing all different kinds of things on scanning. And also remember, on Saturday, it's Family Day, so the kids get in free. So bring your family. They're going to have special things just for kids on Saturday.
All right. It's going to be a great time. February 8th through 11th, Salt Lake City, Utah at the Salt Palace. The web address again, rootstech.org, to find out all about it. And we look forward to seeing you there, Tom.
I'll be happy to be there. It's going to be my pleasure.
And that wraps up our show for this week. This segment of Extreme Genes has been brought to you by FamilySearch.org. The people behind Roots Tech 2017 coming up here February 8th through 11th. Find out more at ExtremeGenes.com. And while you're there, sign up for our Extreme Genes free newsletter, The Weekly Genie. And when you do, you'll get the top 10 tips for beginning genealogists from David Allen Lambert, the chief genealogist for the New England Historic Genealogical Society. Thanks for joining us. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.